Nemoto presents filmmaking giants. Paul Thomas Anderson, American Mythographer. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 10 minutes. You're listening to Filmmaking Giants. Today's filmmaker works at the center of American cinema while constantly pushing against its edges. Paul Thomas Anderson is a director obsessed with power, obsession, intimacy, and the invisible forces that pull people into orbit around one another. His films are not plot machines. They are gravitational fields. Characters don't simply interact. They collide, repel, dominate, submit, and slowly reveal who they are when pressure is applied. Anderson emerged in the 1990s as a prodigy, but what separates him from many early success directors is that he never stopped evolving. Each film feels like a deliberate rethinking of what cinema can do. He experiments with form, scale, tone, and structure, but always in service of character. Anderson's true subject is not spectacle or cleverness. It is the human animal in moments of hunger, hunger for love, control, meaning, recognition, or transcendence. Born in 1970 in California, Anderson grew up around the entertainment industry, but his work has never felt like insider cinema. If anything, his films often feel antagonistic toward systems of power, Hollywood, capitalism, masculinity, religion, while being deeply fascinated by the people who build and inhabit those systems. He doesn't mock them from a distance. He studies them up close, sometimes uncomfortably close. His breakthrough film, Boogie Nights, announced both his ambition and his empathy. On the surface, it's a film about the porn industry in the 1970s and 80s, but Anderson treats that world as a surrogate family drama. The characters are performers, but they are also children searching for approval, parents desperate to be admired, and fragile egos propped up by temporary success. Anderson refuses easy judgment. He doesn't glamorize exploitation, but he also doesn't reduce his characters to victims or villains. What makes Boogie Nights remarkable is its generosity. Anderson allows each character, even the most foolish or destructive, to feel human. The film moves with exuberant energy, long tracking shots, vibrant music, and moments of absurd comedy, but beneath that surface is a deep sadness. Fame does not save anyone. Money does not heal wounds. The American dream, Anderson suggests early on, is a powerful drug with a brutal come down. This balance, between empathy and critique, becomes a defining trait. Anderson never simplifies. He never flattens people into symbols. Even when his characters are monstrous, they are never abstract. They are shaped by desire, insecurity, and history. That focus deepens in Magnolia, Anderson's sprawling, audacious mosaic of intersecting lives. The film is often remembered for its scale and excess, its length, its emotional intensity, its surreal moments, but at its core, Magnolia is a film about inheritance. Emotional inheritance. Trauma passed from parent to child. Shame passed from one generation to the next. Love withheld and then desperately sought. Anderson structures Magnolia not as a traditional narrative but as a symphony. Characters echo one another. Themes repeat. Confessions arrive in waves. Music becomes connective tissue, blurring the line between internal feeling and external reality. The film asks whether people can break free from the damage they inherit or whether they are doomed to repeat it. What's striking is Anderson's refusal to provide neat closure. Some characters find moments of grace. Others do not. Redemption is partial, fleeting, and often ambiguous. The film does not argue that forgiveness solves everything. It argues that acknowledging pain is a start, not a solution. With Punch-Drunk Love, Anderson pivots radically. The film is smaller, stranger, and more abstract. It centers on a man suffocating under loneliness and suppressed rage. Anderson visualizes this inner turmoil through bursts of color, sudden musical stings, and disorienting transitions. Romance becomes something both terrifying and salvational. What Anderson proves here is that his style is not tied to scale. He can work large or small, sprawling or intimate. What remains consistent is his interest in emotional extremity. His characters feel too much or too little or in distorted proportions. Love in Anderson's films is rarely calm. It is destabilizing. It threatens identity even as it offers connection. That tension reaches operatic heights in There Will Be Blood, a film that strips Anderson's concerns down to raw elemental conflict, power, greed, faith, isolation. The film follows a man who builds an empire by extracting oil from the earth, but Anderson frames this not as a success story but as a slow moral vacuum. The more power the protagonist accumulates, the less human he becomes. What makes There Will Be Blood extraordinary is its restraint. The film is patient, controlled, and almost mythic in tone. Dialogue is sparse but devastating. Silence stretches. Music pulses with dread. Anderson allows scenes to breathe, trusting that the weight of what is unspoken will do the work. The central conflict, between capitalism and religion, between material power and spiritual authority, is not presented as a simple opposition. Both systems are exposed as mechanisms of control. Both exploit belief. Anderson refuses to let either side claim moral superiority. Instead, he focuses on the individual who uses both systems to dominate others, and who ultimately ends up alone. After reaching such monumental scale, Anderson surprises again with The Master, a film that is intimate, ambiguous, and psychologically intricate. Loosely inspired by the rise of new religious movements in post-war America, the film is less about belief systems than about need. The need to belong. The need to be led. The need to be admired. At the center is a volatile relationship between a charismatic leader and a deeply damaged follower. Anderson films their bond as something between friendship, mentorship, dependency, and love. It is never fully defined, and that refusal is the point. The film is about how people latch onto systems, ideologies, or figures not because they are true, but because they offer structure to chaos. Anderson does not mock belief. He understands its appeal. He also understands its dangers. The film refuses to tell the audience what to think. It asks them to sit with uncertainty, with unresolved attachment, with the uncomfortable truth that meaning is often constructed, not discovered. With inherent vice, Anderson leans into disorientation deliberately. The film is hazy, meandering, and soaked in paranoia. It mirrors the cultural fog of post-1960s America, a world where idealism curdled into confusion and systems became too complex to grasp. Anderson allows the narrative to drift, embracing incoherence as a reflection of its moment. What could feel indulgent instead becomes purposeful. The film is not about solving a mystery. It's about losing the ability to know what's real, who's in control, and whether resistance is even possible. Anderson's cinema here becomes political without speeches. It captures a mood of suspicion and exhaustion. Phantom Thread marks another turn inward. On the surface, it's a period drama about fashion, but beneath that is a ruthless study of intimacy and control. Anderson examines how love can become a negotiation of power, how devotion can be both nurturing and suffocating. What's remarkable is the film's refusal to frame its relationship as healthy or unhealthy in conventional terms. Anderson presents a partnership built on mutual manipulation, ritual, and dependence. Neither character is dominant all the time. Power shifts. Control becomes erotic, then domestic, then dangerous. Anderson refuses moral clarity, forcing the audience to confront their own assumptions about love. Throughout his career, Anderson's craft has grown increasingly precise. His camera movements are deliberate. His compositions are controlled. His use of music, often collaborating with composers who challenge traditional scoring, creates emotional undercurrents rather than obvious cues. Editing serves rhythm and character, not speed. What defines Anderson as a giant is not just his technical mastery, but his willingness to interrogate American myths from the inside. He doesn't stand apart and critique. He inhabits the systems he examines, showing how seductive they are, how they promise fulfillment, and how they ultimately disappoint. His films are demanding. They require attention, patience, and emotional openness. They do not reward passive viewing. But for those willing to engage, they offer something rare: cinema that feels alive, unstable, and deeply human. Paul Thomas Anderson reminds us that films don't have to provide answers to be meaningful. They can ask better questions. They can linger in discomfort. They can treat characters not as lessons but as mysteries. You've been listening to Filmmaking Giants. Today we explored Paul Thomas Anderson, American mythographer, architect of character gravity, and one of the most searching filmmakers of his generation. Next, we'll turn to Bela Tarr, The Collapse of Time, The Philosophy of Slowness, and Cinema at the Edge of Endurance.